Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime, violence, and poverty if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, and my co-host, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, every morning, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we connect with women everywhere. Together, we can heal our world. But first, we need to heal ourselves. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and be a part of our discussion. 347-539-5639.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and this is Wednesday, our relationship day. So, of course, we've had our first hour with our American Muslim 360 audience and our relationship expert, Brother Mark Shahid. Our sister Natalie, she's handling some personal family business today. Our prayers with her as she works that out. And, of course, we've been dealing with a very common topic, and we've asked the question, is financial hardship stopping you from getting married? We know that the divorce rate is at an all-time high, 63%. And many of the reasons for our marital breakups have to do with money. Often it's the woman being upset that the man is not earning, and we know that it's expected and require that a man be able to take care of his family. For various reasons, men have lost jobs, maybe have had difficulty trying to get retrained or trying to change careers. And so it becomes a very stressful situation when you're struggling financially. Money matters are often the biggest obstacle to making that decision to get married, especially when one partner, generally the man, is either chronically unemployed or severely underemployed. And many men feel the frustration of not being able to measure up to a woman's financial requirements when it comes to being a spouse. Plus, money often represents power and control, and men may hesitate to marry a woman who makes more money than them out of fear that the woman will treat them with disrespect. You know, sisters, we got to be honest. A lot of times when there's an argument, we will throw that in a man's face. Look, I'm the one making the money. I'm the one paying the bills. And if men have experienced that in a previous relationship, they don't want to go through that again. That's very degrading and humiliating. And so if they perceive that it could happen because their financial status is not where a woman may require, they would probably hesitate to make that commitment for marriage because they don't want to go through that again. And some women with children from previous relationships, they seek men who, they're really seeking a man to rescue them from their financial hardship because, you know, I got these children from this other man who's a deadbeat or whatever, he's not around. And so I'm looking for a man to take care of me and my children. Where a lot of men, they may hesitate to step into that because that's perhaps more than they're emotionally and financially able to handle. So that becomes a deterrent. And now other women may be unemployed, but they also hesitate to put themselves in a position of being totally financially dependent on a man out of fear of abuse or abandonment. You know, okay, I'm marrying him because he can take care of me, but what happens if he abuses me and I can't leave, I don't have a way out? So the distrust factor, if they've been in that situation before. So we've got a lot of emotional baggage that we're bringing with us, fears of mistreatment, fears of struggling with somebody who we feel like might take advantage of us because you know, we have money and they don't, and or fears of what our families may say, particularly women marrying a man that, according to society, she might feel is beneath her status because maybe she's professional employed and maybe he's a independent salesman, and you know how we've been programmed. He doesn't have a job, so, you know, our families might discourage that union. So we have to look at that. In the first hour, we kind of talked about how do you deal with that scenario if you have a potential spouse who perhaps doesn't have the structure of a 9-to-5 and makes his money as an independent sales person, and maybe he takes care of himself but doesn't have the structure where he's got financial records, tax records, and all these things that will legitimize him as a business person, a self-employed person. So is that kind of a person unmarriable, or is it possible to take that energy and that willingness to be self-sufficient and give it the structure that would make it workable within a marriage? Well, give us a call, 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation. We're asking the question, is financial hardship stopping you from getting married? And we've got a caller on our American Muslim 360 line. I believe that's Sister Debbie. Thank you so much.
Hello.
Wa alaikum salam.
I've been listening intently, and I think another thing to take into consideration is a lot of people don't have a healthy attitude toward money. It makes
that's
the family. Well, let me just talk from my experience. When I was growing up, my father made a lot of money at first, and we were doing very well, living very well, and then he made bad investments, and he totally, money became very hard, and very, and we weren't able to, we weren't able to, you know, do as well, and it caused my mother to overspend, you know, to ignore it, and I apologize for that sound. That's my old TV. I'm so sorry.
Oh.
I'm going to turn that off right now. Right, there we go. I'm sorry. Okay, let me start again. Okay, so it caused my mother to overspend and to, I mean, buy things that we couldn't afford, and then it caused my father to be so tight with money that, you know, I mean, it was hard to get money for books for school or something. So I think, you know, not having a healthy attitude toward what money is and what it should be is a real prime factor in destroying marital relationships.
I think that's right. And, you know, you can have a lot of money, but you're right, your attitude about it could definitely be destructive. So that's one thing a person's got to look at. What is the level of generosity in a person? If you're a tightwad, so to speak, you know, very selfish, it's good to save, but there are some people that are miserly. And if you've got somebody who, you know, wants to hold on to old, torn-up furniture because they don't want to spend anything to better their condition because they're saving money, but okay, if you're not living off of it, then what good is it? So those are some of the things you got to look at in a person. How do they handle money as a single person? Are they sensible in their spending habits? We are neither to be too extravagant nor too miserly. So if they're, you know, not willing to buy a pair of new shoes, want to put the cardboard in the bottom, you know, to save, and you know they have the money to do it. It's like, okay, why are you being so stingy? And generally, if
right.
they are stingy with spending, then that's going to be an issue in the marriage because they're not going to want to do the little nice things that can make you feel better as a spouse because they're so busy saving. And it's like, well, what are you saving for? You know, we're living now. What you have to be able to spend some and save some, but in a way that makes sense.
I think also when money, which happened in my family growing up, money became the most important thing of everything. And that really has a very bad perception as far as relationships and dealing with just growing up where money is the most important thing. It became where my brother grew up, and he's just so lavish with money. It scares me. He'll spend like about $800 on a dinner for two people, you know, which I just
now that's,
find
that's
outrageous.
The extreme. That's the other extreme. You've
yes,
got the miser,
yes.
And then the person is so extravagant is that they spend like there's no tomorrow. Like somebody told them the world's going to end in 24 hours, so spend every dollar you have today. I mean, yeah, people live
yes.
like that.
Yeah, and it's a little scary as you know, I'm thinking, you know, in our later days, I took care of my parents during their last years, and they were really suffering financially and living on Social Security. And here my brother, he's a doctor and he had money, but he would go out and spend $800 on a dinner for him and his wife or him and his, you know, I have to be honest, one of his girlfriends, and then not give anything to his parents who were really struggling just to buy food to eat. So it's funny.
That's
if you have if you have an unhealthy attitude toward money, miserly or lavishly spending it, you know, or what it means as far as status, you're robbing the relationships of the people you're with, whether they're your parents or your wife or your children.
Well, now that is definitely one of those things that people have to honestly discuss. When it comes to how they're going to handle money and obligations to family members, because we all have,
at some point,
if you have parents, you're going to think about what are your obligations to take care of them, and is your spouse in agreement, if you've got extra, that should be a first priority as opposed to, well, let's take this trip to the Bahamas, you know, but yet, you know, my mother is living in this rundown nursing home. And she really could be living better, but we just choose to ignore her. I mean, how does one,
yes.
you know, assess those things? So, Brother Mark, how does the person determine someone's attitude about money as they discuss finance? You know, their values
yes,
and what they consider important.
Right, right. Well, you know, that's a very, very good question because, you know, first of all, as you stated, you want to have that discussion in regards to how people actually view how they utilize money. If they're kind of conservative or they're very, very liberal, you know, it's Sister Debbie was saying that's more than liberal. I can't even think of a word to describe as extravagant. When
oh,
you start
yeah.
talking about $800, you know, and I'm assuming, you know, your brother would be a type of person that's well off if it's not really loaded with money in that regard. But it is prioritizing, and you know, those things that you actually would spend money on. The
right.
other thing that you really want to look at. Before you actually commit, this is very, very, very important. It's very important to just observe. The Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, said that we should observe that potential. Maybe we should observe them. And what we mean by that, you need to listen to what it is they're saying, but you also need to be observing them in terms of what it is that they do. One of the things in the workshop, you know, when asked the question, you know, what type of person are you actually looking for? You know, you're actually looking for. And, you know, one of the things is the unselfish. That's one of the characteristics. You look unselfish a person, you know, an unselfish person. So you have to look and see what type of person is this person, a selfish person or an unselfish person, you know, and you can somewhat kind of tell, you know, if when you go out, what places maybe you're invited out to or what you might be able to tell in regards to that. And then it may be just congruent with maybe the income that the person has, you know, in that regard. But you'll be able to tell because in having this communication, now you're talking about, you know, we were talking in the first hour in terms of how much maybe say the man takes. So generally speaking, he's going to be the one inviting the woman out to dinner, out to lunch. And so it has to be balanced. It has to, you know, kind of coincide with what it is that he's actually making. I mean, he can't, you know, if he's only making, I don't know if you have White Castles there, but White Castles, I mean, there's cheeseburgers here, say, Lord. So, if he has White Castle, I just say McDonald's. Maybe McDonald's is
well, you know, if you got $3
he got McDonald's money, and he wants to buy you a Happy Meal, you know, then he should be trying to take you to Applebee's, you know, like that. So. You know, one of those type of things, you know. So, if you're going to be fine with that, then you know, you just accept a Happy Meal and know that when you go out, you're going to expect to be eating McDonald's. Now, I'm saying it in a little humorous way, but, you know, you wouldn't be trying to take somebody to a five-star restaurant to impress them as that you got it like this. Maybe you, you know, you don't want to be the type of person that had to beg, borrow, steal, to be able to do that.
Well, you know, there are different kinds of selfishness, because I know a person that was, you know, in our family, a distant relative. However, they were very well-to-do, and they were very lavishly spending on their spouse. But, you know, when it came to spending on very close relatives, you know, parents and so forth, they just didn't see the need. So now I'm wondering, if would you want someone with values like that if they had a parent who was struggling and they let them struggle on their Social Security income and did not see it necessary to help them, yet on their spouse, you know, spouse got diamonds and furs and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would feel comfortable in a relationship where someone was okay with neglecting their parents, but, you know, to do all these impressive things for me, I would not feel comfortable, because I think that's very imbalanced. And even though they might be very generous to me, I know there's also responsibilities that you have to other family members, you know, children and, parents, siblings. And if there's someone else in the family in need, you know, I don't need a fur coat. Matter of fact, I personally don't wear fur because I feel like, you know, the animal who owned it needed more than I do. So, I don't need, you know, expensive jewelry, you know, at the expense of other people who are really in need and suffering. So, for me, that's not a plus. But for some other women, they may feel, well, look, you know, I should be number one in his life, and other people, hey, you know, I got mine, you get yours. So I don't know values like that. I think I would not think that's a plus.
One of the best ways to gauge a man. In my estimation, is how he treats his parents, and if the man, how he treats his mother. You see, if he does not, you know, treat his mother well, then as far as I'm concerned, that should be a red flag.
And I hope that person I'm talking about ain't listening to the show, but if they are, oh well.
I think that would be good. That would be good because what we're trying to do is to help people in terms of what it is that they should look for. Because when I say observation, you know, then this is something that we need to observe. We need to observe the relationship that a man has with his mother in terms of how well he looked after her. And I say I love my mother to death, but maybe she's dying, and you're not even trying to do what you can do to help take care of her. You know, love her to life and see how much you really care, you know. And so if you are a potential mate, then you should be looking at that. You should be looking at the relationship that he has with his sisters. You know, I mean, the women that are in that man's family, look at how he cares
look at
for
how
them.
He cares for them,
you know?
That, I mean, it has a lot. It shows a lot.
The empathy, the sensitivity that's there, because this is a natural bond, you would think, a natural bond with mothers and sisters, you know, aunts, you know, the females in the family in terms of how he relates to them. That would be a good indicator how he is going to really, really, and I'm putting emphasis, really relate to you. See, you know, one thing in terms of, as my good brother Kareem often says, in terms of sending your representative, but that's not really you. That's not really you. I mean, you know, he may just be trying to captivate you to impress you to the point, whereas that you believe that this is going to continue on. But after you say you do, he won't, or he don't again.
Mm.
So you gotta be able to distinguish, you know, are you gonna continuously get these flowers? You know, he's saying you're here in the movies, but I actually know some, you know, men that did that. They were sending flowers every day.
Mm-hmm.
You always start the way, you know, you want to continue in the relationship. So you don't want to, you know, create some false impressions, which leads to expectations that those are not genuine. Don't be disingenuous, you know, in what it is that we do, man. You know, what you do, be sincere about that. You know, if you can only do it sometimes, periodically, then do that. Do it just because. But if you start off with a pattern, women will be expecting you to continue in that pattern, in the what it is, how you spend money. You see, because if you make it seem as though money is no issue, it's like Debbie, your brother, money is
yes,
no issue.
Yes.
But
right.
Then when they commit, now money becomes the issue.
Right,
now,
and you're with women. We're with the spending person that we've been hanging out all this time, and you hadn't worried about, that's true. It's like, wait a minute, what happened? Now you're a tightwad. Before you just, you know, lavishly spending on me. Now all of a sudden, you know, buy a $20 pair of shoes, you want to have a fit. And wait a minute, before you know, blowing money on $100 dinners and whatnot. So what?
Well,
right.
I think also spending money as a status symbol. You know, but that's what my brother does a lot. You know, he spends money to impress other people instead of spending it on his family and on his parents. For example, he spent $10,000 on his daughter's bar mitzvah, which I thought was crazy. I mean, you know, what 13-year-old needs that kind of party of $10,000? I just thought that was absurd.
You can tell
I'm a bit critical of him because my other brother, who's just a teacher, would send money constantly, and he didn't have that much money, but he'd send it constantly to my parents, and I would do what I could to support my parents. But our older brother, who's a doctor, who was an orthopedic surgeon, who's doing quite well, was so skimpy when it came to our parents as far as taking care of them. And my parents put him through medical school, paid for his apartment, did everything. I think that was part of the problem. He was given everything. So when he grew up, he just always thought
he
was
no
entitled
value
to everything. He had no value, no respect for what money is supposed to do, and no good values. And it's sad, and I think that's because they gave him everything, including, which I couldn't believe. I mean, a car and paying for his apartment when he was a resident, that's crazy. And most people don't have it like that, but that's what he developed into, unfortunately.
Well, and I think that brings out a really important issue that people need to think about as they raise children. What values are you giving your children based on how they observe how you spend your money? Because if you evaluate everybody based on your self-worth is based on how much you make, but you're not teaching It's not how much you make, it's how you spend what you make that determines your decency as a person. Because we get very much into programming, into chasing money, chasing somebody with money, and judging people's worth based on how much they earn and not looking at how they spend, which really reveals their values. And if the only thing you see is, you know, a person's designer clothes and their nice car, and you don't see in the background that mother that's homesick and she can't even get him to go to the pharmacy and pick up her medication because he's so busy showboating with women. You know, you don't see that part, but that's the person that you end up marrying. And then that selfishness will come out in other ways. But Brother Mark, now you've got some questions under money management that really makes a person have to just lay it on the line and talk about it. The first question is, what is your current financial condition? One, the debt load versus assets, and two, your credit standing. Now, we know a lot of us credit wise that we're just not there. I mean, I know when I got married, I had to tell my husband, look, I still have my student loan. I mean, that's real, and I've got debts. You know, I've been in business for a few years. I have some debts, so we had to really talk about that and talk about how would his responsibility be towards paying my old debt or helping me pay my old debt or realizing that a good portion of my income was going to be towards paying my old debts. How does a person be honest about that or make sure that other person being honest? I mean, do you ask for bank statements or, you know, how do you make sure that they're giving you the real deal when they talk about their credit and their debt?
Well, I think that, you know, it should be twofold. First of all, obviously, this is something that we need to talk about. You know, we should not be going into marriage blindly. And then, you know, we have an eye-opener. You know, wow, I didn't know you had all that, Naima. You know, I mean, you're like, oh, Lord, you know, how are we going to do this here? What? Because, you know, there's always solutions to any particular issue or challenge that, you know, that we may be confronted with in marriage in that regard. But we got to be open and honest again. We got to put it on the table. Any debt that the woman may have or that the man may have. As far as that goes, and women are not the only one that get in debt, men get in debt too for whatever reason. And in the case of the woman, it's like you mentioned in terms of maybe say a student loan or whatever. Well, okay, so what could be the compromise here, you know, in that regard? Obviously, that would be the only financial responsibility that you had. So if you were looking at a potential spouse and everything, then the good thing about it would be that maybe you would be relieved of some of those other financial responsibilities because now you're in a committed relationship in marriage. So some of those other financial responsibilities in terms of be it mortgage or a rent or, you know, utilities or, you know, just even gas in the car or food on the table, and maybe that's no longer becomes a responsibility that you're shouldering. Maybe your new spouse, he's shouldering that, but you still have the financial, student loan. But now, whatever it is that you do, now it can be going toward that, and maybe you have some extra money to do some of the things that you want to do. Now, that's just, you know, as a possible solution in that regard, just offering a solution because, you know, for two to come together should make it easier, in coming together than living an individual life because actually, living, you know, as an individual, all those things have to be addressed individually and not together.
So now what if a person, working together. What if you're considering marrying somebody and their credit rating is just so bad, I mean, you know, you'd never be able to purchase a house with based on their credit, for whatever reason, maybe made some bad decisions, maybe had to go through bankruptcy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that if they're not an asset to you financially based on what they're bringing? Can that be a deal breaker, or do you figure out, okay, this is how we're going to work this out together, this is how we're going to work on repairing your credit?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you've gone through things in life, things do happen. You know, you can have had a long time of unemployment, you know, just not being able to pay medical bills, whatever, and ends up your credit's ruined. And so it's going to affect you being able to buy a car or get a decent rate on a car or being able to buy a house or any of the things that require some level of credit. Or even, I mean, I know some adults don't even have a bank account because they've wrecked so many accounts, you know, had to close accounts, overdrawn, so forth. So they can't even open up an account because they've got so many back bills that their financial situation just wrecked. And, you know, can't buy a car in their own name, can't open a bank account in their own name, you know, living on the fringes of society because of past bad decisions and past financial hardship. So is it possible for that person to consider marriage or consider themselves as a viable marriage partner when they're really coming with some bad baggage financially? Or if that's a good person, do you consider maybe we can work together, I can help you get your credit straight? How do you judge whether or not you should take a risk with somebody like that?
No, well, I would say make sure you got everything you're supposed to have. No, but no,
keep everything in your own name.
Make sure you got everything. No, I'm just teasing in regards to that. But no, you have to. But you really have to really, really look at that. You know, I can say for myself personally, the houses that I've owned before in my life and actually purchased, I never did it, you know, with it being contingent upon what it was that my wife's earnings were. I never did it in that regard. Now, why am I saying that? I'm saying that simply because if it is the man that is going to be shouldering the responsibility, and let's say that the woman is, oh, wow, you know, her credit rating is bad. It's almost like it's irreparable, you know, unless she just come into a large sum of money and, you know, just start to paying off, you know, people from years back or whatever to get a good credit status again, it probably would remain in that shape. So obviously, then if anything is going to be purchased, you know, on credit, I mean, you know, you almost got to look at it, with, you know, in terms of house or car, which is something that, generally speaking, is purchased on time payment. It's going to be contingent upon the one person that's got the good credit, you know, I have to look at it from that perspective and that perspective only, because the other mate just got bad credit. Now, whether or not you be denied credit because of that person, but then it may be that you may have to do a little negotiating in that regard. And if you got exceptional credit, that can override maybe, say, you know, teaming up or joining with somebody that's got bad credit, and that it almost have to be done individually, even though you would actually be married or working as a team together in that regard. But that person would have to be fine with that. But it can't be a skeleton. This is a big point. It cannot be a skeleton. I mean, you can't conceal that.
You have to be honest about that. So now, if
you are before marriage, and then after the vows are taken, you see, really, let's understand something about marriage. You know, that's when you are relating on all levels. When you're relating on all levels,
so there needs to be full disclosure about things
that you know are important, that potential mate needs to know about you, and you would want to know about them, because vice versa, you would want to know, you know, what their credit rating is, so you know what their financial status is, you know, in that regard. You know, you can't, you know, one of the workshops in St. Louis, I kind of jokingly said, you know, one of the things that's very, very important in a healthy relationship is trust. I mean, you know,
so now should you
be married to a person that you don't trust? As a matter of fact, you take your money and you hide it in a fold, old Folgers can, and you put it in somewhere. Then you have a heart attack and you die, and then
and nobody knows it's there.
She winds up selling the house, and she didn't know that she had, you know, about $50,000 that was in the basement in the Folgers can.
And you didn't trust her
in the house. The house was only worth $75,000. And so the people, they decide to buy the house. They go down and they clean the basement, and they discover they got $50,000. So they only paid except for $25,000 for the house. See, so
you know, I know people like that. You know, hiding money because they don't trust their spouses. But now, if you got a bad financial situation, if you are in extreme debt, you know, bankruptcy or whatever. Do you need to explain that to your spouse? I mean, do you need to explain, oh, this isn't just because
was
just careless or irresponsible, you know, this emergency happened in my life or you know, I lost a job or whatever the case may be. Do you need to explain that so that you can be clear that it's not because of poor judgment and spending? Because otherwise, if it's because of poor judgment, that means you're going to continue that poor judgment and your spending habits. You know, you take the rent money and, you know, blow it gambling or something. I mean, you know, people need to know why is your credit this bad? Why are you in this kind of debt? What didn't you do?
Yeah.
The reason why your bills were not paid.
Well, that opens up a whole new can of worms. I mean, if they've got a gambling problem, I mean, then you're having to deal with that as well, and not just the financial, but when someone has any kind of addiction like that, then I don't know. I think that's a red flag about going into a relationship until they know how to deal with it or get some help for it.
Yeah, well, I think debt can certainly open up the door as to what might be a problem. I mean, we all can go through, like if you're going to school, you know, it takes a while to pay off a student loan. That's understandable. You can have illness, not have insurance. That could be a debt that takes a while to pay off. But I think it needs to be discussed. Why do you have this debt? And you do have to see if a person is making poor decisions when it comes to financial management that would continue into a marriage where you're going to always be fighting over, you know, do you really need to buy this new car right now? And, you know, we're barely, based on our income, we're, you know, barely making rent and keeping the gas on. You know, is this a good decision right now? Or should we get this used car that, you know, runs well but isn't taking all of our income plus, you know, so things like that, making poor choices when it comes to buying. And I think those are the things that people have to observe.
You know, Naima, that's a point that's well taken, because obviously with these questions, there would be follow-up questions in terms of how you actually got into this predicament, and, you know. And then also, I think, which is also very, very important, if you really, truly have learned your lesson, you know, and I think...
that's the question. Have you learned not to repeat this?
You know, you have to really be able to say to the person, now this is how I'm living, this is what I do, you know, because I would want to feel comfortable, you know, I'm on the other end and I'm looking at a potential mate. Do they still have these habits? I mean, you know, are they still a prisoner of these bad habits? And I'm knowing that habits can be your best friend or your worst enemy. So if this is a bad habit and you still have that habit, now you may even see that the opportunity is there more so for you to continue on like that, because there's additional money now coming into the relationship.
You can blow your money and blow my money too.
I've had that said before. You know, my money is my money and your money is my money. I can get that too, you know. See, so you know, so you need to be clear about that. And then, you know, they may also say in this here, you know, so that it doesn't become a deal breaker, they may say to you, you know, I'm a lot better than what I used to be, and I know I am because this is what I'm doing now, ABC. But you know what? I would prefer that you handle the money management in this relationship. I'm fine with that, you know, in that regard. You know, in my grandmother, my grandparents, my grandmother was the money manager. My grandfather, actually, he did the work. But at that time, they used to have, I don't know if you old enough to remember, they used to have what they call policy, where they played a number.
Like the lottery.
Like the lottery, you know, a miniature form of the lotteries at that time. And at that time, it was really illegal, you see, because, you know, there was no control over that.
Right.
Who makes the money and everything. So anything, you know, that generally speaking that the government can't control, it becomes illegal. Figure that
right.
one out. But anyway.
So they can figure out how to control it, then they make it legal.
Yeah, right. So that was happening, and my grandfather used to like to do that. And my grandmother would give him an allowance. So now if he overextended himself, and he would come to us and he would then maybe borrow some money from us, and he had to wait till next week when he got paid and he got his little allowance. And he knew he couldn't go back to my grandmother and get any additional money. Well, she would.
So she kept him on a budget.
Money, but, I mean,
and sometimes you have to do that.
Budget. All the bills got paid. Now, why am I saying that? My grandmother only went to the fifth grade. She used to refer to herself as a fifth grade scholar with a lot of mother wit. So we have to make a determination as to who's going to manage.
Who is going to manage the money? And it's not necessarily the one who earns the most. Right.
Right. Not the one that earns the most is the one to be necessarily be in control. It may have to be a collaborative effort there, or it may be like you manage. You manage because you're a better manager than I am. I just go out and make it. You manage. But trust, you know, when we start talking about money, we can never leave trust out of the picture. That's why I painted that picture that, you know, you have to have trust in that. And you should not be entertaining the idea of marrying somebody that you really just don't trust, you know.
Right. You must be able to trust. Absolutely. And that's usually where things fall apart. Like you say, somebody got, you know, a stash in a can in the basement because they don't trust their partner because maybe they've had bad experiences of people blowing money. But, you know, this is very common. When you're listening to The Female Solution, I'm your host, Naima Latif, and today we're talking about, is financial hardship stopping you from getting married? We're on with our relationship expert, Brother Mark Shaheed, and we want to take some of your calls. If you're listening on our American Muslim 360 line, you can give us a call at 646-716-4478. If you're listening on our blog talk channel, The Female Solution, you can call us at 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation and give us your question or comments. We've got some callers on the line. Let's go to our friend at – oh, wait a minute. Where'd you go?
There
you are.
Back.
yes, 618-520. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for joining us on The Female Solution. Give us your name, where you're calling from. Oh, alaikum.
This is Brother Danny calling from East St. Louis.
Ah, yes, sir.
Alaikum.
Alaikum.
Yes, I'm enjoying you all. And I guess one of the things that I like to reference is in a situation like this, you know, when there's a person is seeking to get married and going a little bit further than just seeking a potential mate for the first time. There was a sister that wrote an article in the Muslim Journal back here June 8th, 2008. And I guess the situation was somewhat like what you all are describing, whereas, you know, she was unfortunate to get a decent mate from the beginning. And also she wound up getting pretty desperate. And so she put an article in the Muslim Journal seeking to become a co-mate in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether or not you caught that article, but I would share with you some of the things that she was seeking in this relationship. She's a 42-year-old Muslim
mm-hmm.
woman,
mm-hmm.
seeking moderate brother for early co-marriage only. Would like the brother to be permanently resident of, I'm not going to name the state because
right.
I don't want to exist there.
Right.
But anyway, she preferred the brother pray at least 5 times a day
mm-hmm.
and can provide for a family of 3, God-fearing, not controlling,
mm-hmm.
and she preferred the height of the individual, and she was serious about the situation, and she said, "Don't call unless you are serious about this type of situation." So I think this particular mate here is kind of frustrated a little bit about, you know, the perfect man to get married to, but
mm-hmm.
she want to satisfy her instinctive needs, and she also want to try to provide a father for her children. So I thought that was kind of unique, and I think it kind of fits right in with what you all are discussing in marriage relationship.
Well, you know, she was bold enough to put it in writing and put it in a public paper, but there's a whole lot of women, if they were bold enough, would have done the same thing because they're in the same situation. Got children from a relationship that didn't work, needing help, you know, willing to get married to a brother who they feel, you know, and the description, God-fearing, you know, that's one of those things that's subject to interpretation. So, and that's why I'm glad that Brother Mark has this questionnaire that really gets into some specifics, because we tend to get into marriages with someone and say, okay, he's a Muslim, he goes to the mosque, he says his prayers, he reads the Quran, he's willing to marry me. You know, physically he looks, you know, pleasing enough to my eyes. Okay, so let's get married. And then it ends up a disaster, and we can't figure out what we did wrong. And it's because we didn't get into those details that matter. And she said not controlling, okay, that's again subject to interpretation, because how does one know the difference between being concerned and being controlling, being protective, being controlling? So it's really challenging for women, particularly if they've got children, to find a brother who is willing to take on a family, number one, and number two, that your children can bond with, because that's essential as well. And if you've got sons and they're either approaching puberty or going into teen years, they're not going to readily accept another man coming in being the man of the house. If they've been the man of the house for the last 3-4 years, even if they might just be, you know, 14, 15 years old, because that's just the dynamics of how that works. So we have to really be detailed in seeking someone. And there just isn't any, substitute for a courtship in which you get to know a person. You can have all right things on paper, you know, say all the prayers and everything else, but if there's not some real compatibility and harmony with you and your children, you can't make it work. And so I admire the sister for just putting it out there, because she's done what a lot of women would do if they weren't afraid of maybe being publicly ridiculed. But women say, well, where are the men? Where are they? And where are the men who are financially able to help me? I got these children, and I'm trying to be a good mother, and I don't want to leave them and go and work. But I need some financial help, and, you know, I don't want to just prostitute myself, you know, just
you know, but where are the brothers willing to be the husband? So I don't know, brother, what do you think? You know, I find a lot of the stopping point is this financial question. So do you think there are men that are willing to take on a
family? One of the things I find interesting, and I was listening very intently, Brother Gunny has read that, and I've heard it. I've heard the articles. He's read it to me, I guess, at least five times or more now. But,
come on, Mark.
But the thing is this here. What I find interesting in this request, and I want this to go over the listenership head, is this. You know, if the request is actually made, you know, by a woman in that regard, seeking a mate, and everything, you have to, you know, have to express some concern here. And what I'm looking at is this here, is that she didn't say either or in that regard. Now, that's fine, you know, if she's willing to be a co-wife, that's fine to state that. But I would think that there's an issue that's involved in terms of actually wanting to be a wife, you know, being a wife too. See, so to me, I see an underlying issue that may be there, you know, in that regard. Because now, this is one of the things I say in the workshops I give here in St. Louis and last week in Kansas City. The key is, you have to be the person that you're looking for.
Right.
So you can't have a lot of bad, I would say, qualities yourself, but then you're looking for good qualities. You're looking for the benefit of the advantage to be in your favor only. And not understand that there's a requirement that you also have to meet and you must also meet too. Because now, even in that situation in terms of polygamy, there still becomes responsibility and obligation. And this is where, that you know, one day it is my intention here in St. Louis to give a workshop exclusively on polygamy. It becomes a fascination, you know, for many, I didn't say many, but oftentimes too many men in terms of that, how it works, how it's supposed to work, the benefits in it and everything. And sometimes for some men in the Muslim community thinking that there's a sense of entitlement to it, you know, without it being a prerequisite in it. And so I find that very, very ironic that she didn't mention that. And it was like a preference just for that. And now, had she come to the conclusion that no man that was single, you know, would actually consider her as a wife because she had three children? If she comes to no, I think that, you know, that should have been an option in terms of that, you know, and Allah is the best knower in that regard. Praise be to Allah that she considered being a co-wife. But in fact, you know, being a wife or co-wife becomes a very viable option for her because she does have children and, you know, whether or not, but there are men. You know, let's not paint a one-sided picture. There are men that have taken on women, you know, in a monogamous relationship where they had children prior, and even they may have had children prior to meeting this mate, and they lived together as a happy family, and they were providers for them. So, you know, I think there's some other issues that are going on there in that regard. And it's interesting to have talked to her to see
Well, Mark, I could give you the prerequisites for a polygyny in a situation like that. Whereas it's only required that you have a decent education, you have decent economics, and you're an excellent person. That's the prerequisites for polygyny when it comes to taking on a co-wife. So Al-Islam is a very balanced religion. It's a very balanced religion. It covers all aspects of life when it comes to relationship between the male and the female. Al-Islam is a very balanced relationship, you know. And there's nothing wrong with two women being in love with the same man, because you have 8 to 10 women out here to every one good man.
Mm.
It's not the man so much as looking at the women's, but the women's are looking at the men. So therefore, the Muslim woman have to understand that a good man is getting a lot of attention from women's. And it's not the man so much looking at the women's as much as the women's is looking at the man.
Mm.
And the man have to be able to measure up to his role and his responsibility and qualify himself so we can offset this deficit in relationship between the male and the female.
Well, you know, so, brother, next week I'm working on having several sisters that are in the co-wife situations, polygynous situations, and they can give their perspectives,
okay,
the pros and cons, because I think as we talk about this, and I was on a radio show a couple of nights ago, and as always, it gets extremely emotional because women who are in marriages where men have either attempted to have co-wives or just, you know, cheated on them or whatever, either way, it was a situation where the woman was not in agreement with his other relationship. And so you have all this hostility. And even though Islam designates how it's to be done and what are the requirements, unless there is harmony between the women, it will not work. And so women have to get to that point emotionally and spiritually and intellectually to recognize this as a viable structure for a family. And we got a lot of internal repair to do on ourselves to get to that point. So I want to bring on some sisters that are been in it or are in it now, and they can explain some things and dispel a lot of myths about it, and also even help brothers understand the things that they need to do to make it emotionally possible for women to accept. We are wounded as women, and most of it has to do with issues of betrayal and fears of abandonment, because we didn't grow up with healthy relationships with our fathers, or we didn't grow up with fathers in the home at all. So when you don't have a good relationship with your father, it's hard for you to be a good spouse because you haven't seen that healthy male-female relationship. So then someone comes along and says, well, I want to get a second wife in addition to you. First thing a woman reacts is with fear and then anger. So that's where we get stuck at. So that's why I want to have women on that really talk about that, because there's another issue even as we look at the finances. If you're bringing in a sister into your family and she's got children from a previous relationship with a brother who's not paying child support or whatever the situation may be, and you're the woman, you're the first wife, well then are you expected to assist in, because what's going to happen if you're the one, maybe you might be the one who has the strongest financial resource. You might have the highest paying job. So what happens? Do you then combine your money so you end up actually being the one to help paying for the second wife? And how do you feel about that if that's the case?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
you got you're making $75,000 a year. Your husband's maybe making $30,000. He wants to do the second wife, and she got 3 children.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be your money that's helping pay her bills. Are you good with
Absolutely.
That, or do you all have a kind of sisterhood in your heart? 9 times out of 10, right now the answer is no. So that's why we got to look at what it takes to really make that work
on a deeper emotional level.
Naima,
you know, once we tackle this problem from the top down instead of the bottom up, we'll be able to simplify for those people that are very serious about the way Prophet Muhammad established it and the way his wives accepted. If we have to, if we, you know, if we deal with it from the top down, I think for those people that are ready for this type of a lifestyle, it's very easy for them. Instead of just, you know, just going around in circles and, you know. And so if we come from the top down with people, if we interview people from the top down, like if they're looking at Surah 87, Ayah 1 through 4, and they come on down the line, because Allah have provided everything that we need in order to perfect our situation, especially our situation in this country. Because I think it's an epidemic when we talk about marriage in America, and we're in the kind of situation that we're in. And when we look at the economical factors, the educational factors, the healthcare factors, and all the social issues, you know, the indicators are very, very low. But I think if we bring it from the top down, we'll put it in perspective. And for those people that want it, they can get it. But those people that don't want it, you know, we just can't worry about, you know, everybody, you know.
But, Brother Ghani, let me say this, as Mark Shaheed here, is this here. Let's not speak over the listenership here. When we're saying top down instead of bottom up, you know, let's not use the cliche without explaining what it is that you mean in regards to top down. We have Sister Debbie on. If I were to ask her that question, do you know what he means when he's saying top down?
Let me
explain what I'm saying. When I say top down, I'm going from the high standard of our religion, in order to reach a viable solution. I'm not talking all around the corners. I'm going from the top, going to the bottom. This is top down, not bottom up. You know, in other words, everybody has an opinion, but if the opinion is not established, you know, at least they have an opinion. But, you know, we have to go with the most established opinion when we're trying to solve the male-female relationship that Allah has about it, you know.
Well, so, brother, you certainly brought a point that has to be addressed, because it's not going to go away if we ignore it. And so this, and I want to let our listeners know that this is one of the issues that will be addressed in our upcoming establishment of a think tank. And we want you, if you're anywhere around the Chicagoland area or want to travel to the Chicagoland area, we want you to join us for a two-day conference establishing a think tank, a meeting of the mind, the female solution. And starting Friday, November 15th at the Salam Restaurant, which, of course, is at 79th and Emerald in Chicago, 6 to 9 p.m. Enjoy a delicious dinner as we get together with some dynamic sisters dealing with everything from health, business, finance, personal relationships, and then join us Saturday at the Life Builders United Community Post. That's Saturday, November 16th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., we'll have a full day of planning, culminating in the establishment of a fund that's going to help finance a lot of the great ideas that are already out here, programs, organizations that are doing the things that make the difference. They just need that financial backing to make it work. And that will be at the Life Builders United Community Post at 6855 South Emerald in Chicago. We want you to join us. A delicious lunch, and also we're going to have those who are involved with making the changes that make the difference be able to share their knowledge so that we can all provide those solutions. And one of those key things that we will be discussing, plural marriage option, and what it would take for us as women to be able to understand it from the spiritual perspective that it is. And in order to do that, we've got to do some growth from the inside out. Every problem we have can be solved if we have love. But love is not a theory. It's an evolution in spirit. And if you want for your sister what you want for yourself, then you understand the need for her survival and the need to share, and understanding that love is not possession. It's agreeing to help a person through this spiritual journey. And we all need to have that loving partner that helps us in that process. So if the numbers are what they are, and as you say, brother, they are, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 women wanting marriage as opposed to men who are willing to marry, and across the country, what do we do for our children like this sister with the three children? What do we do for women like this who need someone? And she probably did come up with the thought that, when, you know, no single man is going to want to take on a ready-made family. Maybe a brother might be willing to have a second wife, but what she didn't consider, what about his first wife? And if he's not being honest, he's not realizing he can't do it without his first wife's approval either and make it work.
You know, Naima, it's ironic that you're mentioning that. You're saying that also this weekend in Kansas City, we have Imam Fahim Shuad, which I'm quite sure you're familiar with, and especially the Muslim Community Association with Imam W.D. Muhammad was there. He was the khatib for the Juma. He also gave a marriage workshop with his wife Yolanda, as I gave a workshop, and she attended, very impressed with the workshop that I gave. One of the things that Imam Fahim Shuaib asked me to do is to take the banner of trying to, what he calls, Muslim male marriage movement. Muslim marriage, Muslim male marriage movement, and that's what we're going to call it. And I accept that challenge, and starting right here in St. Louis, and we're going to be calling on all of those Muslims that are knowledgeable, that understand the importance, the significance, the value, the purpose of marriage, to help to try to promote marriage in the community by men. One of the things that you know, that I observed, and also was his observation in the workshops that were given for singles, the great disparity of the women who attended the workshop and the lack of men who come to the workshop, you understand, in order to get this particular education, the information that you're talking about. Next month, there. And so it may be the type of thing, whereas that, you know, that I think the second day, if men could be involved and have input in that, that would be good too, because in my observation, the issue a lot of times is more with men than it are with women, even though, you know, the numbers do say there is a disparity, but it's a unique situation here in St. Louis, where you have more single men than you have single women.
Mm.
So we do, as Imam Fahim Shuaib said, and he suggested to me in this regard, that we need to have a Muslim male marriage movement. That's what we're calling it. That's what it is that I'm going to be promoting in that regard. And so obviously that it's going to require some motivation, and I think it's going to require some education with many of the men, because, as you know, you and I have talked, Naima, off air in regards to some of these issues and problems that obviously exist in our community. And I was glad to hear Imam Fahim Shuaib bring that up, bring it to my attention, that this is something that we need to address in terms of a solution for an obvious problem. We got too many Muslim men that are not married, and they seem to be very, very, complacent and very satisfied with that status. But that should not be the disposition of a Muslim man. You know, the desire is to be married. So we need to really get into that and see what is the issue and the concern, and perhaps education, information would be a solution and also a motivator to take on the responsibility that Allah would have us to take on. I just wanted to state that before we continue.
Well, I'm certainly curious as to what the hesitation is for a lot of men. We're going to take a quick after a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to take some calls, and I really want to know what is the hesitation for men who are following a religion that says marriage is half the faith, so you're really only practicing half your faith if you're unmarried. But I'm sure there are some underlying reasons, and I'd like to hear from our callers. Of course, you know, give us a call. If you're listening on our American Muslim 360 channel, you can call us at 646-716-4478. If you're listening on our blog talk channel, The Female Solution, you can call us at 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation. We're going to take some calls when we come back. We've asked the question, is financial hardship stopping you from getting married? We'll be right back in just a moment. Stay with us.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
And we're back. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif. And we've got our relationship expert on the line for our Wednesday Relationship Day, Brother Mark Shaheed. We've been going through some of the questions on his marriage questionnaire, particularly some of the financial questions. And the intention is to fully disclose whatever your financial situation may be, because often that is the cause of marital breakups. So we've got to be able to...
I say this here in regards something that comes to my mind, and I think that I need to share with the listenership is this here, and especially the Muslims that are familiar with the first marriage of the Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, to Lady Khadija. Actually, Khadija sent a representative. We got some background noise, too.
It's a speakerphone. But somebody's on a speakerphone, and it gives an echo.
Okay. So, but what she did, she sent a representative of hers to, at that time, Muhammad ibn Abdullah. He was only 25 years of age, and she was 40, 15 years his senior. He was not yet, had not yet come into prophethood, but he was and had been employed by her managing her business. And in managing her business, she saw, obviously, some very desirable qualities or characteristics that a woman ordinarily would look for in a man. And Muhammad ibn Abdullah, he possessed those qualities, those characteristics. So that became an instant attraction to her. But the ironic thing was, is when the representative of Lady Khadija approached the Prophet, inquiring about marriage, and his thing was, or his concern was, that he, at that time, didn't think that he could afford to be married. So something that we're talking about here in terms of economics, but the response was, you know, well, I don't really think I'm able.
Right. I don't want to marry this rich woman, and I don't have the money.
Yeah, to have the money, but the representative says, "What if, you know, money is no problem?" He says, "No problem." Yes, you know what? So then he really piqued his curiosity as to who this person could be. So finally, he asked, you know, if it was Khadija, and so at that time, the representative says, yes, Khadija, in that regard. So I'm saying that to say this, you know, a lot of times, you know, maybe in men's mind that financially they're not able to really get married in terms of assuming all of the responsibility, you know, financial responsibility. But I think that what Lady Khadijah offered, you know, in that regard, that it was not so much that she was looking for that type of security, because Allah had already blessed her with a good business. And obviously, when Muhammad, and I'm saying at that time, he was not yet the prophet. He was Muhammad ibn Abdullah. And so obviously, Allah had blessed her with somebody that was trustworthy, that was honest, that had good characteristics, and had good managing skills in the business, and was increasing her business. And so obviously this was an attraction. And why am I saying that? I'm saying this, that we're looking at character here, in which we talk about taqwa. And so women should really be, you know, money matter, and money is a factor, but also we need to be looking at the character of the person and all. And if we see a beautiful character that's there, and obviously a hard worker, a person that's willing to work, then we need to consider trying to work with that person. That's the point that I really want to make and to emphasize in that regard, because in that first marriage, that's how it actually occurred. It was the woman being assertive. And I want to use the word assertive as opposed to being aggressive, but being assertive and letting it be known that maybe because of a man's financial status does not make him totally, what you might say, an unattractive person for marriage. And
well, let me ask this question then. Let me ask this question and put this out here then. Brothers, you know, respond, please. Would you feel comfortable marrying a woman who was very much financially well off, much more than you, and you know you're going into the marriage not the strong financial partner, meaning that she is the one who's calling the shots because she's got the money, but she wants to marry you because she thinks you're a person of good character? Would you feel comfortable in that situation, or would you feel at a disadvantage based on the fact that, in our minds, a lot of times, money equals power and control? And sisters, I'd like to hear from you. If you were financially well off, you know, doing well, and not looking for a spouse to take care of you and all of that, and you met someone and you found he was a person of good character, but he didn't have any money, would you still feel comfortable marrying him, knowing that you're the person who's basically going to be financially responsible in that relationship? How do you feel about that? Just as a concept, you know, understanding that money represents what it represents us, which is generally the person who has the money is the person who's in authority. That's how we tend to think about it. But how do you feel about those dynamics? The woman having the money, the man having no money, can they get together based on love and respect? Tell me what you think. We've got some callers. Let's go to our caller at area code 518-978. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for joining us on the Female Solution here on American Muslim 360. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your perspective on this.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Mahasan.
Alaikum salam. This is Mahasan. All right. I know you got some insight on this.
Assalamu alaikum.
Before I share, and inshallah, I'll try to keep this brief, I don't know how juxtapositioned you may be in terms of seeing when callers press 1 and come in, but I often... sometimes I'll say, I think I get lost in the queue as issues are being discussed that other callers, including myself, may want to speak on or respond to or ask a question about. And sometimes it's way down the line before the opportunity presents itself. So I just wanted to share that. It's a little strange. Okay, it's a little strange. Is this any better?
Yes.
Is this better? Okay.
Yes. Always a remind our callers to always remind our callers to press one, because we've got a lot that are listening. But of course, until they press one, I don't know they want to speak.
I've been listening for about 45 minutes, maybe an hour. So what I wanted to, in response to the questions you just asked, Sister Naima, I think that there's, it's interesting the take. It's almost like the issue of the elephant. You know, everybody grabs a portion of it, and they say that that's the elephant.
Yes, ma'am.
At the height of your discussion about marriage qualifiers or qualifications or being qualified for marriage, I'd like to put more emphasis on that pre-qualifying. It's like the concept of credit. You have to get pre-qualified to be considered. And it's the pre-qualifiers that the Dean of Al-Islam really into in detail to make it easy, not to make it hard. Sometimes your qualifications around things, and it presents a mountain that has to be scaled so that the real intention is really not to qualify anybody, to make it difficult. And the Imam wrote a book about the climate, Islamic climate for business success. And I think we could substitute the word marriage, Islamic climate, or social climate for marital success. I would not hesitate to say that it's like a landmine area. It's fraught with obstacles. And the more we move into the social issues, the greater the sociological obstacles become to just becoming married. And I think Al-Islam is suffering from the same, the practice of it, let's say, is degenerating and suffering from the same issues that we're erecting huge obstacles to the concept of something that is half of our deen.
So why do you think that is? Why do you think that's happening? What are we doing that's making it so difficult? Like brothers saying there's so many single brothers. Why aren't people able to just get married? What is it, in your opinion?
We get over-influenced by the situation's influences in society. And nowadays, the purpose of marriage has been lost, as far as I'm concerned. And there isn't much desire to go back and reclaim the original purpose of marriage. You know, putting the security of the establishment of family, security of women and children, these are not primary reasons for marriage anymore. And that's why we can get into a discussion, a never-ending discussion about finances. In the Quran, the purpose of marriage is to help the male fulfill his role. The first element of his role is provision, right? So when we're talking about whether the woman would be willing to marry someone who is lacking, or I don't like to use that word, limitedly qualified, when she has real needs, even as a single woman, if she's not divorced and coming back around trying to remarry, what emphasis or encouragement do we have for men to look qualifier? Okay. Then there's the maintenance, not a footing of establishment, but have maintained that to carry it on, because marriage is a permanent bond that extends over time. It's not something we get in, we taste it. You know, we get a bad taste in our mind, and whoops, we're out the door. It's not that type of a situation. And then the third level is protection, right? So the woman, the female, is the quote-unquote weaker sex. We really need and appreciate that male strength, that physical advantage, so that we are not abused and misused in the larger society. Now, who is thinking about that? Who has those priorities, those qualifiers at the top of their agenda in terms of fulfilling? Even in our discussion this morning, there are so many distractive qualifiers that people seem to be more preoccupied. And if we're going to establish a movement here, I love the idea of a male, Muslim male marriage movement, but it has to be established on the right criteria. Lastly, let me correct the concept that I think would be helpful in terms of Lady Khadija and the sign and symbol of the role that she played. She had been twice married to obviously wealthy, and she was from a highly virtuous family. And in those days, virtue was a greater asset than money. So Allah, in her life, excuse me, she married twice and was widowed twice. Okay, then she maintained her business, but she was getting to an age where she needed help. So at the same time, the uncle who Prophet Muhammad was living with, they were poor. They needed assets. Prophet Muhammad was not working. And so the uncle asked around or got information that Lady Khadija radiallahu anha was looking for a manager for her business, commercial trade business.
Yeah.
And so he suggested that Muhammad go and apply.
Yeah.
And Prophet Muhammad was interested in being a financial asset to his family. Right? His uncle was getting older. There were just things the family needed, and he needed to be a viable contributor. So he went, he applied, he passed the interview, he was hired, he conducted the first levels of performance. She sent someone to observe him, unbeknownst to him, his performance while he was on the road. And the feedback that that person got from those that he traded with had increased Khadija's business assets, bottom line, because of his character.
Yeah.
Most of them said he had a different way of dealing. He was trustworthy. He was respectful. He wasn't a shyster, right? He wasn't trying to use fraud, okay? So when
definitely, if you're in business, that's a big asset.
Yes. When the person reported back to Lady Khadija, it was a second thought. She said, "Well, I'm single. I'm looking for a husband, and these are the qualities that I want in a husband." So she sent the same person back to ask Prophet Muhammad, would he be interested in marriage? And my understanding is, his initial response was, "I'm not qualified. I don't have the assets that would qualify me for marriage." And Lady Khadija was very intelligent. She had already primed her I call it the lookout, Prophet Muhammad, to make second offer. This is why if you're a good business person, you know how to make a winning deal. And you know how to make a second offer if the first one doesn't come through. And the second offer was, "Well, what would you consider it? Would you consider the situation if the person had enough for the both of you? And he had to stop and think. And of course, we know history as it that then he said, yes, he would consider it. Right? Now, as they went on to pursue establishing the relationship, it turned out God bless them to be compatible mates. They married. And it was not an issue. She was not looking for somebody to take care of.
Okay, now Sister Mahasin, and now let's look at that situation in view of today's current reality. We have a lot of sisters are gainfully employed, professional positions, making sizable incomes, maybe even have purchased their own homes. We have a lot of brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They, like we talked about in the first hour, maybe they may not have 9-to-5 jobs. Maybe they, you know, more or less independent salespeople, entrepreneurs, whatever it is, but they are not on that same economic level. And women talk about this all the time. You know, what is an eligible bachelor? Who is an eligible man to marry? And they start looking at corporate America, and they're not seeing those images of the suit and tie, briefcase wearing, expensive car driving male that they may see as on their same economic level. But there may be a lot of men who are of high moral character that are following ethics and moral principles and all of that, but don't have the income. So how do they see that, as Sister Khadija saw it, and think, I don't need somebody to take care of me, but I want a man of character.
Okay. But Sister Naima, you said the operant word, and that was the basis of the marriage between Lady Khadija and the Prophet. It was a character issue. That was the determining factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it would be the same today. It's no different.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Mahatma. You hit the nail on the head. That's why I brought up the story, and I want to thank you, Sister Mahatma, because you were very much more in terms of detail and actually stressing and emphasizing the character, because actually, I think you probably can agree with this. A lot of times we say, you understand, when the four reasons that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam say the reasons for marriage, you know, and we know that wealth is one of them. Actually, we're talking about finance and everything, beauty and social status and taqwa, that taqwa should take a priority over all of that. And that was the point that I was trying to make in terms of the Prophet's character.
Well, we've got some callers.
That became the attraction there. And I agree with you, Mahasin, that should still be the most attractive thing that should be looked at.
We've got some callers that want to respond on that. And I think there's a philosophy behind it, but then there's the cultural and the social reality that we're living in, and that's where we're kind of stuck at, which is possibly why a lot of brothers have not chosen to get married. But let me go to our brother here at 312-671, Brother Minister Robert Floyd Plum. Thank you for joining us. Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings to you. Introduce yourself to our audience and give us your opinion on this topic. Is financial
well,
problems
yes,
stopping
from
getting married?
And Amistad. And good morning, beloved. How is the 23 family?
Oh, we're wonderful. We're wonderful. Now, I heard the statistics, and I guess in St. Louis it's a big thing. A lot of single men, even more than single women, and I know that there are a lot of single men in Chicago as well. Men are not getting married. Is it the financial condition that's stopping them? And, you know, what's your opinion on that? And do you think that a man would you feel comfortable marrying a woman who had, you know, much more financial resources than you? Would that make you feel uncomfortable?
I would say yes. Yes, let me answer the first question in the sense, and not necessarily in the sense of a Muslim way of life, but in a universal way of life. I think that with which would, you know, encounter the Muslims, the Christians, the Hebrews, the nationalists, but the most important ingredient is yes for marriage. You know, I do always respect it in a civilized way, in an honorable way. And the bottom line, as you all have mentioned, is in an excellent reflection of a good Christian image. You know, is not taking it out of the order of the Prophet Muhammad. However, Dr. King said it's the content of the character. So that's a relationship, you know, that across the board that men can grow into. And yet, you know, our men as a whole has been going through something. So what we do is to help them to grow into a financial institution of themselves that, you know, I feel comfortable in saying that, you know, it's a 50-50 type of relationship. In other words, the way we demonstrate and encourage brothers and sisters to be in a 50-50 relationship is they either should be rich or wealthy, either way, or wealthy or rich, in order to encourage positive mental attitude of marriage. That's a part of the solution. You see what I'm saying? In a way of life that, you know, it doesn't matter what the religious faith of one may be, but yet the content of the character that would grow across the board in terms of both being mature enough even to make. And usually if people are either rich or wealthy, they most likely are balanced in a mature way that they make a sound decision in terms of marriage. So I always encourage that because it's a spiritual way, which is a godlike way that, you know, the Lord of the worlds always poses that or makes that as a proposal for us to,
well, you know,
to grow in.
You're right. It's always about character. We just can't seem to bridge that gap between theory and practice when it comes to marrying for character and for piety and all these things, even though they're universal principles, but we get stuck when it comes to that financial situation. Well, let's take a call from our brother in St. Louis.
We go to the next caller. I just want to share this because we have a continuous Rama sale. And one of the most important things is that we establish people into their own job opportunity by creating our own jobs as well as entrepreneurship and helping them to get established in their own business. So we still have a special, what we call a blowout, every day from 11 to 7 at 235 East 58th Street. And the blowout means everything must go, you know. So we have a complete sellout, and we are relocating. So try to come out and join us at 235 East 58th Street from 11 to 7 every day. We're there in Chicago.
Well, for those in the Chicago area, hopefully that is a means to help some of these brothers who are, in fact, in need of some financial support, and perhaps that's a means where some of our entrepreneurs can develop that financial base that they would need to make that marital commitment. But let me go to my brother here in St. Louis, Brother Pianchi. Now, again, hearing that there in your city, the men are not stepping up to get married. And I know that marriage is generally not something women shy away from. So what do you think is the reason why there's a hesitation? Is financial hardship stopping today's men from getting married? And would a man feel comfortable marrying a woman if she was the one who had the money and he didn't? If she said, well, look, I don't care about that. I'm marrying you for your character. What do you think of the dynamics in that situation?
Well, you know, if anything can be wrong with anything, it's going to happen here in St. Louis. I just wanted to put that out.
Okay.
And, you know, as far as, economics is an issue that plagues African-American, black and African-American people in the United States, no matter what affiliations they're with, as general. We are in terrible economic shape. And, of course, if you don't have that living in this country, the way this society is designed, then you're going to have problems. I can't speak for how others would feel about whether or not the female was the major breadwinner, nor do I want to, you know, expose, you know, my feelings about that, because I think I just don't like doing it. I like to talk on general terms in a discussion, because you have a diverse listening audience. I hope that you have that meeting that show, you include women or couples or individuals who are in these arrangements that represent, like the brother minister mentioned. He mentioned the Muslims, he mentioned the Hebrews, he mentioned the nationalists, and you know, also you got non-believers. And that
yes,
you
and,
get,
and I and I'm talking to people from
especially
various
those people over
communities
on 76th
that are practicing
Street.
That so that they yes. So I'm talking to, and I want to have a variety of people on that represent various faiths, and like you say, some that not necessarily doing it for religious reasons at all, but just for maybe cultural reasons or because that is a way to handle our families and help our children get secure. But when it comes to
not
making
like,
that decision to
that,
be a spouse.
But, you know, another thing, too, Naima, real quick. And I wouldn't let me finish on this. The other lady, I can't think of her name. She talks very calm and thorough. She mentioned in the story she was telling about, I think it's Alicia, who was in her commercial venture.
Khadija, first wife of the Prophet Muhammad, older than him. I think she was 15 years older than him. She was wealthy, had been married twice, widowed twice, had wealth. When she chose to marry him or asked would he be willing to marry her, she was the one who had the finances. He was not. He was a merchant. He did not have a finance back. He was an orphan. So, you know, I guess in today's
he didn't think that he qualified.
Socially mismatched. Right.
I think the answer to your question, the answer to your butt question, is that the qualifications have to be placed on the table, going into anything. And qualification can be further reinforced by investigations, i.e. background checks and so on and so on and so on. And qualifications may not just stem on the economic position of one or the other. Right, it could span through a whole host of things, from the complexion of their skin color or to their height, to their weight, and so on and so on and so on. So individuals have peculiarities, and those are being shown in who it is that they want to take on as a mate or more than one mate. Hey, you can believe that Zuma's five wives. I doubt if either one of them have the income that he has, President Zuma, who's the president of South Africa.
Right. I mean, you know, that I think, and Sister Mahasin brought up a point, that we really lost the reason for marriage. And so when you don't have a reason and you don't both agree on what the reason is, a lot of times that's why it doesn't work. So if one person's reason is, I need somebody to help me financially, another person's reason is, I'm looking for love and companionship, another person's reason is, I need to get out of my parents' house, you know, all kinds of reasons that you may have, and if they're not reasons that are really based on the right reason, it's going to be very difficult to make that marriage work, especially if it's for things that are transient and subject to change, such as finance. If you marry somebody because they have money, and then what happens if they lose it? Do you leave them? So I don't know. But Brother Mark, before I go to the next caller, what do you think about that?
Yeah.
What is the reason why men in St. Louis aren't getting married?
Well, let me say this here. I listened to a lot of that, and I want to say, first of all, to Sister Mahasan, that the conversation I had with Imam Fahim Shoaib, we both were aware of the fact that there is, and you've heard me say this on this program, that there is a prerequisite even for monogamy as well as polygyny in terms of a qualifier. So we're just not going out there naked in terms of when we say Muslim male marriage movement. You know, because when I say education, information, and that becomes a big piece of it in that regard. Also, when we start talking about poverty or poor, the acronym for poor is people or person oppressed over revenue. People or person oppressed over revenue.
Oppressed over revenue.
So, you know, that becomes, you know, an issue. But I want to relate this here to maybe those of us, Bianchi, yourself or whatever, in terms of whether you were blessed to be alive when your grandparents or your great-grandparents were here, even if they passed on. And what I want to relate to is, I guess you probably can relate to, because I know in my family, I was blessed to know my grandparents and on both sides, and even for a period of time in my early years, my great-grandmother. Why am I saying that? You know, because when they actually married, you know, the things that we now are discussing in terms of it being an issue, it wasn't an issue then, because neither one had anything.
Right.
But today,
they pooled together whatever they had.
So just like Sister Mahasan had said earlier, I think it gets back to that, because and I think the emphasis, which you say, should not be on that. The main factor, I think society and culture has put more emphasis on that. So now they have pointed that out to be the focus, the main focus, when still we are talking about living with the person inside, in terms of the type of character. Because let's look at the wealthy. You know, those who have the money.
And their marriages are a mess. So apparently wealth is not what makes it work. I mean, like you say, you look at the wealthy, the famous, their lives are a disaster. So obviously that's not the thing.
Yeah.
Well, we got a couple more calls. I know we want to ask you some questions. We've got a few more callers that, of course, want to give their opinion on this topic. Like, we got another call from St. Louis at 314-898. Thank you for joining us on The Female Solution. Give us your name and where you're calling from, your question or comment on the topic. Is financial hardship stopping you from getting married? Well, alaikum salam, brother.
Yes, my name is Rose Muhammad, and I'm
here
in St. Louis.
Yes, sir.
And I'm glad that your radio audience is great. And this is very good conversation that we got, you know. First thing that I want to, as far as my input is concerned, you know, matters, as the prophet said, peace be upon all, judged by intentions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Matters
yes.
are judged by intentions, not necessarily
yes.
the act itself, but
yes.
what was
these
intended.
These are judged by your intentions, right.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we have to ask ourselves, one of the sisters in Kansas City, me, Mark, Ghani, and all of us, we rode up together to Kansas City, so we had some very stimulating conversations. And one of the sisters made the comment in Kansas City. She said, you know, seemed like the brothers want younger sisters. She was, you know, sister, you know, the older. And, you know.
So why is that, in your opinion? Why is that happening? I mean, I'm sure St. Louis is a mirror of so many other cities, but what is making men hesitate to get married? Now, I can tell you what they tell me, and most of them is because they've seen too many marriages end in disaster. The man is end up devastated. He's, you know, saddled with child support and everything else and all this conflict. They have fears of being humiliated because they don't have money or because, and a lot of men say, sisters have too many emotional issues and they just can't deal with it. And those are the things that I have heard. But what is your perception or what.
Okay, wait a minute. Did you hear that from? You hear that from men who were married to
men.
Older sisters or to younger sisters?
Well, men who may have gotten either they got married maybe in their 20s or something like that and ended badly, or they grew up in families where there was a lot of strife between parents, and so they just did not see good examples of happy, harmonious couples in their lives. What they saw was maybe men who stayed single and therefore perhaps did not have, in their opinion, a lot of the kind of drama that they saw in married couples' lives. That's been their opinion and their experience.
Yeah, Naima. And I think we got to change that type of thinking, that paradigm of thinking, you know. What I've seen when I was younger, you know, in my dad, you know, I didn't see, you know, the type of brother who had a good grasp over himself and how to negotiate the waters of marriage with my mother, you know. But you know what that did to me? It didn't demotivate me. It motivated me to never take that path that I've seen my father taking, you know. And it really was a motivator. So it's the way we perceive a thing. You know, when you perceive a thing, you don't go back up in no cave or no corner. You know, you use that as a stimulus for yourself to not become that particular thing, to make sure my marriage works better, you know. And getting back to my original point, brothers got to ask themselves that. And, you know, I was looking at a little old program, somewhat grafted last night. I wouldn't do grafted if they snuck it in on us. But this guy, you know, they were older, much older, and his wife sort of, you know, was walking around. But in his mind, he's seen one of these, you know, these people from Hawaii, you know, ladies that do that thing.
The belly dancers and all that.
Yeah, whatever it is. That's what he was seeing in his mind when he was looking at the woman, you know, and looking at his wife, you know. So that brings us to this stage here. Do Muslim men who want this polygyny, matters are judged by intention. Do you just want a young, curvaceous sister for ego stroking? You know?
It's not just Muslim men. It's men in general. That's what men like, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. The question becomes, if we talk about why do people get married in the first place? Well, I love that movie, both of them, and Why Did I Get Married and Why Did I Get Married Too. You know, you look at why are you choosing the person that you're choosing, and yes, men may want someone who's physically pleasing, but does that mean that person has the character that you want? And most of the men that I know that have gotten divorced, they married the pretty woman with the curves and all of that, and then it was hell in their household, and they didn't have any qualifiers in terms of how do you judge the character, how do you judge the personality, how do you judge the compatibility. They didn't have any of that, and they weren't taught that. So how can you know something unless you've been taught? So I think that's part of what makes men hesitate. Maybe the first experience they had was so bad, they don't want to trust it again. Mm-hmm. And maybe they've been through all kinds of humiliation when it came to maybe even having a woman kick them out the house after the relationship turned bad. You know, police called on them, all kinds. I mean, I just heard all the horror stories. So the men today who hesitate to get married feel like, if I don't have the finances to have the say-so on what goes on in my house, I don't want to take that chance because I've seen some hell that I don't want to ever get into again. But hold that thought, brother. We've got a couple of other calls. We're giving an opportunity to weigh in. I believe we've got our sister, Rashida, on the line. Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings to you, my sister. Introduce yourself. Where you're calling from? Give us your opinion on this topic. What is keeping our men from getting married?
I think what's keeping our brothers from marrying the sisters is that financially, and they really don't understand the institution. We don't understand the institution of marriage. And in my opinion, the institution of marriage is filling all the institutions, home, school, church, and as well as community. Instead, we expect to receive in certain religions dowries, which a dowry today from a brother cannot even maintain you for 6 months. And because of the economic situation and because of the misconception of marriage, it makes them, you know, go out into the broader communities because they don't have to be obligated. It's not so much about emotionalism because I think brothers like emotional women, especially one with character, in my opinion. I don't know. But me, personally, I was married. I was married to a spiritual, a so-called religious brother in my religion, and I divorced. I went way beyond the terms of divorce, waiting, you know, celibacy and chaste. And then my cousin brought to my attention, you are getting old. No brother approached. Everybody knew that I was single, but I was really into the spiritual part of the religion, and they don't want a woman that's only focused on, you know, the discipline and of that religion. And then because they do have the opportunity to have more than one wife, they really just branch off because there's no way in the world, knowing what Scripture dictates, that a widower, divorced, an orphan is supposed to have priorities when it comes to support that it's not given.
Well, that's what the brother was talking about in earlier. The brother was telling us about the article that the woman put in the Muslim Journal. You know, she's a woman with children and, you know, again saying, look, I'm willing to be the co-wife because that's what the scripture in Al-Nisa chapter 4, the advice is for men to marry. Well, of course, to take care of the orphans, which is, you know, children who don't have fathers or mothers or either or parent missing, but then also to marry women who can help them in that process, which basically is giving priority to the widow. But that doesn't always happen.
Because it's not being done. It's redundant.
Yes. Well, you know, that's something we got to look at. Because I believe there's somebody for everybody, but again, we got to figure out why are people not marrying, because there's a fear there. But let's go to another caller. We got just a few minutes left. And let's go. I believe this is my sister, Patricia. Assalamu alaikum. And peace and blessings to you. I believe at 111.
Hello? Oh, assalamu alaikum. How are you doing this morning?
Wa alaikum salam, my sister. I know you always got wisdom for us.
And yes, ma'am.
Trying to tackle this issue and figure out what is it that we need to do.
Well, I don't have a whole lot of wisdom. I pray a lot. He blesses me with the light of understanding to just share what I observe. And basically what I observe is that culture clash, you know. Those of us who grew up in American-style culture and came into Islam have that conflict of not allowing the American-type value to interfere with our Islamic values. Then we have the traditionalist, we have the Christian, we have all that. All of us who are trying to adhere to some kind of moral standard that institutes a way of life for you, be it traditional African, be it Christian, whatever.
And then that's the reverse.
Hello? Well,
yes,
I was saying
right
that in that it creates a culture clash because I find that, you know, even though we say we're this or that or the other, American values and their perceptions of our
seconds.
Men, perceptions of ourselves interfere with how we deal with one another. And it still keeps creeping up in our lives. So I think that's the main problem that we have. And women have negative attitudes about men who don't have, and women, you know, vice versa. So it's a lot of things that we have to stop in ourselves and know that most of the problems we do have is based off of it's like a result of our oppression for the most part of us as a people, and then the other personal things, the little little personal things we have, it's just things that we could work out, but for the most part, I find that to be the problem.
I think you're right. So I think we're dealing with that oppression, but we're out of time now. But I do want to thank all of you all for listening in and joining in on the Female Solution here on Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, join us next week. We are going to address some more of those issues on the marriage questionnaire, but also we want to bring in some people who have, in fact, looked at the family structure of polygyny and what is actually the appropriate relationship between the women? What is the appropriate intention of the man and even his abilities before that is a workable solution? And again, we want to ask you all to join us for a meeting of the mind.
10 seconds.
Conference, Friday, November 15th, 6 to 9 p.m. at the beautiful, luxurious Salam Restaurant at 79th and Emerald in Chicago. And then Saturday, November 16th, from 10 to 6 p.m. at Life Builders United Community Post at 6855 South Emerald for a full day of some real strategizing and culminating in a creation of a fund that's going to really finance some of these great ideas that we have right here in our community that are working. So I want to thank you, Brother Mark, for being the expert that gives us some insight. And can you give us the your contact information?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can be reached at lowercase Shahid, S-H-A-H-I-D, Mark, M-A-R-K, H-R, at yahoo.com. And also I can be contacted, area code 314-704-3718. Once again, area code 314-704-3718. I've enjoyed it. A lot of good information was given. I look forward to next week on the Female Solution. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. And assalamu alaikum and peace be with all of you. Again, you can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Enjoy our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, and don't forget to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Until tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., may you all have a blessed day.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime, violence, and poverty if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is The Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, and my co-host, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, every morning, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we connect with women everywhere. Together, we can heal our world. But first, we need to heal ourselves. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and be a part of our discussion, 347-539-5639.